Back together again, you and I, Monday, November 27th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. I returned from vacation and chatted with Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio of Greenwich about a controversial plan to prohibit the sale of internal combustion engine vehicles in Connecticut by 2035. We also took a few moments to check in with Connecticut News Junkie and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill, who had a few thoughts about a famous Connecticut resident with a national profile. And as we await the vote coming up tomorrow and the Regulations Review Committee, that will have a lot to say as to whether or not, you know, Connecticut goes gasoline and diesel free with, you know, new vehicles starting in 2035, which is not all that far away. And this is kind of why I wanted to talk about this too today. I had a my own little experience with a dead battery. Yes, over the vacation week, which has been remedied. I have a new battery, but I'm just sitting there, you know, turning the key on the car and saying, "Well, what if this was an EV?" I know it's not the same thing. I understand it's not the same thing, but, you know, just sitting there and understanding whether or not I have enough juice to get going or not. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Once again, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So we'll see how this all shakes out tomorrow. Bob and Trumbull's with us. Bob, what's up?
Paul, I got two things.
Okay.
First, I'm going to make trouble.
Okay.
First, the traffic guy, they should put it in this thing they're voting on, that the traffic guys have to put the traffic report at least to the tunnel.
Yeah.
Going that, up the parkway.
Okay.
And at least to the first bridge.
Yeah.
Now for this EV stuff,
yeah.
I got an idea that they should add to it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Anybody that votes for it,
yeah,
should put at least 6 charging stations in their driveway,
mm-hmm,
and at least 12 in their front yard, and they must be cleared in the winter of snow. And the plow trucks may not use diesel. So,
yeah,
when
but see,
the plow
he,
trucks run no, out of their power,
yeah,
they must go out and shovel it.
I get your point,
and
Bob,
you,
but here's the thing, and you hit on the key point here, Bob. There's been no vote on this. See, people don't understand the only reason they want to do this, Bob, is because the last vote, you know when the only vote on this stuff was, Bob? 2004. It was 19 years ago. Nobody thought of EVs as mass market stuff 19 years ago. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, but these people, they don't think anyway.
Well, that's debatable, Bob. Thank you. See, folks, that's the problem. With all due respect to what Bob just said, well, anybody who voted on this EV thing, there was no specific vote on the EV, the notion that we may outlaw their sales. What happened was 19 years ago, we had a bipartisan vote to align ourselves with California. But even with that, there, in my mind, is an abdication of the responsibility here to fully debate this stuff. I mean, does that make any sense? Just because California's doing it, we have to do it. Now, a gentleman who can give us his perspective on this, who is not on the Regulations Review Committee, so he will not have a say in this, although I can guess how he feels about this, is a Greenwich Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio. Ryan, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Paul. It's good to be with you.
Thanks, Ryan. And again, if you could just go into a little more detail here. I've tried to in the first hour of the show here. There seems to be, Ryan, a little queasiness now starting to build in here. Am I reading this wrong, or we're hearing that some of the Democrats on regs and review here, if only one of them votes no, this gets kicked back to the General Assembly? And by some of the quotes I'm reading and seeing, Ryan, is the magnitude of what this vote may or may not do tomorrow, is that starting to weigh on people a little bit or not?
I think that is the correct reading. So, you know, for your listeners, and I'm sure you explained it to them, but might as well reiterate, there was a regulation introduced by the Department of Environmental Protection that would, you know, according to them, under the 2004 law, basically copy and paste the existing vehicle regulations from California and ban the sale of new electric vehicles, new gasoline-powered vehicles and trucks starting in 2035, or fully ban them starting in 2035, which is obviously a major change and has major implications for costs for electric consumers and obviously people buying vehicles. So, you know, I obviously think for economic reasons, for personal freedom reasons, it's a bad idea. But under kind of the Connecticut system, what happens when a regulation is proposed like that, it goes to the Regulatory Review Committee, which is by statute 50-50 between Republicans and Democrats. And if one person from either side, one person basically in this case from the Democrat side, defects and votes with the Republicans, it strikes down the proposed regulation. If it's 50-50, then the regulation goes forward. So, you know, if I'm to, you know, what I'm hearing now kind of from the inside as of today is that probably one of the Democrats is going to defect. At least one of the Democrats is probably going to defect and vote against it, which would be great news, obviously, for Connecticut residents who are paying way too much in their energy bills and paying way too much generally for the right to live in this great state because of our economic policies. So that is what I'm hearing, and we're hopeful, but it's because people have been speaking up against this, you know, I think radical proposal that would make Connecticut even more unaffordable that a couple of the Democrats on the committee are considering voting against it.
And, you know, Ryan, what drives me nuts, and you've probably seen some of these quotes, too, from the environmental folks, which is fine. We all want a clean environment. It's just we disagree on how we get there. But saying, well, any no votes for this, I mean, if you're against, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it's the same kind of fertilizer, Ryan, you know. Well, if you're against this, then you're against the environment. No. I mean, it drives me nuts when people just want to question things, Ryan. And the big thing we're questioning here is, where's all this power coming from? We still, maybe you've seen something, Ryan. I haven't seen anything that comes close to a logical answer on that.
That's exactly right. And it's at the same time, this proposal is contemporaneous with the news that all the offshore wind developments are either far more expensive than originally proposed, or they're not going to go forward at all. And that's what, according to the regional regulator, the state and the region are counting on in order to produce more energy. And obviously that's intermittent power in the first place, so it only operates about 40% of the time when the wind's blowing. So no one has answered that question for me either. And so at the same time, you're seeing destruction of new supply, new generation, and the new generation that is going to come online is going to be far more expensive than anticipated, maybe three times the cost of nuclear and natural gas. We have this regulation proposed that is going to artificially increase demand. So you have demand going way, way up, and you have supply that just isn't remotely going to be able to keep up. So you're going to look at energy bills that are going to go far through the roof. They're already too high in the state. But then you're going to be under, you know, a situation in 15 years where demand is so far outpaced supply. Demand is more than doubled, I think, under this regulation and other developments in our economy and our policy. Demand is more than doubling. You know, what that means is that in winter, when it's really cold out, you might have rolling blackouts. And rolling blackouts aren't just a matter of inconvenience in the winter, especially. It's a matter of safety and life or death for sickly and older residents. So this is very serious. It's going in the wrong direction. And so I really implore my colleagues on the committee tomorrow to vote against this regulation for all those reasons and more.
You know, Ryan, the guest is Ryan Fazio, Republican state Senate member from Greenwich. Ryan, you know, listen, I'm not that much of a historian, but I know at one time the main mode of transportation in this country was horse and buggy. And then people said, hey, this whole automobile thing kind of works. And, you know, gasoline and diesel. And I'm reading over the weekend, Ryan, that this year is going to be the, again, it's growing every year, the sales without really any government mandates, but there are, you know, tax breaks. But, you know, they predict 1.3 to 1.4 million EVs or hybrids will be sold this year. Those people obviously feel comfortable with the fact that they can get power. So, Ryan, you know, I know this doesn't work all the time, but it seems to me the market is dictating here. And just the way we have energy efficient appliances now and better insulation for homes, if some of these wonks, Ryan, will just leave it alone, it'll evolve by itself.
That's right. And I think the industry will be strengthened. I think the technology will be strengthened if it succeeds through competition, not through mandates and subsidies that actually, I think, make industries more lazy and more focused on lobbying governments rather than innovating and producing the best product. I'm very much rooting, and I said that if you go to my YouTube page, Senator Ryan Fazio, and listen to my remarks at the press conference a couple months ago, I am very much rooting for greater electric vehicle proliferation. I think electric vehicles are, they're fun, they're great to drive. But I think it's a good thing that it sees reduced emissions and potentially better air quality. But you got to do it through competition and innovation. That's the only way this is going to work. And I'm for policies that enable that sort of competitive, that sort of innovation to occur. But forcing it down the throats of residents, taking away personal choice, picking winners and losers in the economy, and increasing the cost of living for people in a state where the cost of living is far too high already is not the right way to do it. And it's not going to be the way to improve our environment in the long run. I think we can have a cleaner energy portfolio. I think we can make the state more affordable. And there's about 10 different proposals that I've made along all those lines to achieve, move towards those ends. But we got to be smart and pragmatic about it and balanced about it. And we can't have all these mandates that are going to make people's lives worse without improving the environment.
And Ryan, finally, forgive me if I'm wrong here. Did I then read or would, let's say there is one or two, or there is or are one or two Democrats who defect and say no on this. Would this then, this notion of this gradual phase out of internal combustion engine vehicles, would that then have to go before the entire General Assembly? Am I hearing that right or not?
I think that is correct. Yes. Yes. So, you know, more likely what would happen is the proposal would be pulled. But we'll see. We'll see. It'll be the decision of the majority to choose which path to go down.
All right. State Senator Ryan Fazio joining us. Ryan, thanks. And we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
I appreciate it. There you go. So he is hearing that this may at least get a timeout tomorrow. Now, again, it doesn't mean that it'll be gone, but at least, if just one Democrat votes no with the seven Republicans there, there would be a timeout on this regulation. Now, it could be reworked. Maybe you want to stretch it out from 2035 to 2055, so that instead of 11 years, that becomes, you know what, 31 years, if I'm doing the math right? I mean, is that the way to do it? I don't know. Before we go to the break here, somebody had sent me this. This, I believe, is from the Hartford Business Journal. Higher demand for electricity means more capacity needed, right? Which is not rocket science, right? So I'll tell you what, when we come back, we'll get to a couple of these quotes here. These quotes from a gentleman with one of the state utilities who was simply tries to explain, hey, if you want all these EVs, here's what you need power-wise. All right, open phones right now at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And this just in, this broke just before 5 o'clock earlier today, facing defeat. Governor Lamont withdraws Connecticut's gas car ban regulations. So congratulations to you folks that complain that you folks out there that weren't comfortable with this, wondering about where the power generation was going to be, saying, hey, it's good that we're getting electric cars, but not just to this note here. Don't force them on us. Story here in the Connecticut Mirror by Mark Pazniokas. The administration reluctantly made the decision to withdraw the regulations after being told that opponents had the votes to kill them. Now, understand something. Because this is going to be... This is all... In fact, not likely. I'm reading this already. This is going to likely be phrased, positioned as those dastardly Republicans. Now, understand something. Regulations and Review is a 50-50 committee. There's seven Republicans on it, and there are seven Democrats on it. So understand, by the governor's office doing this and saying this, what you're going to have here likely was one or two defections by Democrats. The story goes on. A majority of the legislature's Regulation Review Committee was poised to vote Tuesday to kill the regulations prohibiting new gasoline-powered vehicle sales by 2035. Says here, forcing advocates and the administration to craft a new plan for passage by the full General Assembly in 2024. And that's the way this should be done. I'm not saying don't do it, but to revert back to something that was voted on in 2004, 19 years ago, a generation ago, and then say, well, okay, now we're going to attach this as a regulation because old California is doing it. Hey, wait a minute. That doesn't sit well with a lot of people. And apparently he didn't sit well with, you know, some Democrats on there. I mean, Kathy Austin, again, very powerful. There were rumblings about Joan Hartley in Waterbury. So, again, let's do this out in the open. And if it passes on a party line vote in the latest iteration coming up of the General Assembly, well, so be it. I'm all for change as long as it's done in a democratic small d way. And let's hear the arguments for it now, coming up likely in the early part of next year, as 2024 is rounding out to be a rather interesting year. Elections, General Assembly. Now, how does this issue affect the General Assembly's election? And do the powers that be table this for a year, you know, and try to get past another state house and state senate election and then bring it back in the odd years? Remember the mantra here: in the even years, it's all renaming post offices and building basketball courts. In the odd years, that's when they talk taxes and all that. So we'll get back to that momentarily. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. There is another fascinating story going on here in Connecticut. Either know him or you love this guy, Ralph Nader, who, has had some accomplishments, talks a good name, but he's been running, allegedly running a newspaper that hasn't been doing all too well, and it's kind of become an example of a microcosm as to what's wrong with people jumping in here to want to save the news business and do this, that, and the other, and then maybe not doing what they said. Terry Cowgill joins us from the Connecticut News Junkie. He's got some thoughts on this and other stuff. Terry, it's been a while. How are you?
Yes. Hey, not bad, thank you. I had a nice Thanksgiving, and I just wanted you to know that I really hope that you have either deleted or filed away some of those 98,000 emails in your inbox.
you enjoyed that?
I don't know. Yes. Folks, what happened is I was, and Terry and I are Facebook friends, and I was just kind of bouncing around one day, and look, we keep emails only because I was told early on, hey, if it's business, pleasure, whatever, just the storage space is out there. So I put casually, I have 98,000 emails. Now, Terry, I don't know whether you saw that string. A gentleman of mine, a buddy of mine, Jim McKay, who anchors at WBZ Radio in Boston, he beat me, Terry. He has 102,000 in his inbox. So
I did see that. He went over the 100,000 mark. That's quite impressive.
So there you go. So, Terry, a Connecticut native, a love him or hate him kind of guy, up in your neck of the woods, Ralph Nader, he's still out there, still getting media attention. What's going on with him now?
Yeah, well, he provided sort of seed money to get this new newspaper off the ground in Winsted, the Winsted Citizen, and he hired Andy Tebow, who is an experienced editor, and basically, he thought that Winsted was in a news vacuum. That's what he called it, a news vacuum. Mm-hmm. It actually isn't, because the Republican American is in there. They've got a couple of reporters who write about Winsted. So I don't think that there was a news vacuum in Winsted. I think he just doesn't like the Republican Americans. That is a very conservative editorial page.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He probably felt that, they needed another voice or whatever. But he didn't make good on additional funding, even though he suggested that he would. So it started off as a weekly, was going to be a print publication, and then it quickly changed over to a monthly. And then Andy Tebow announced, about a week or two ago, that they were going to have to cease operations because they were just totally out of money. And then there was a statement that came out that basically said, well, never mind. We're not actually closing because American Business Media, which is owned by Vince Valvo, you may recall him. He is a longtime Connecticut journalist, mm-hmm. business journalist.
Yep.
And he owns American Business Media, which actually my editor at CT News Junkie, Christine Stewart, works at. And so he announced that he actually was acquiring this paper. And he wants to take it into the 21st century. Ralph apparently thought that print was the future of journalism. And we know how ridiculous that is in this day and age. So I think it's a good thing that it's been bought by this company, and they have the resources to make it good. And it was kind of a disaster. But I used to be a development director at the Gilbert School, which is Ralph's alma mater in Winsted. Okay. So I got to know him a bit. And he's a very smart guy. He did great work with all of the work that he did in the 60s on the Corvair.
Yeah.
And it probably saved hundreds of lives. But he is reviled by Democrats for his role in the 2000 presidential election.
Yep.
When he peeled off, he got about 30,000 votes in Florida, and the presumption is that if he had not been on the ballot, that most of those 30,000 votes would have gone to Al Gore.
He was Jill Stein before Jill Stein.
That's right. But as far as I know, Nader has nothing against vaccines, so
yeah.
That's always good.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Ralph, he's a good guy. He's an affable fellow. I enjoyed his company when I was around him. But he doesn't really know anything about business, and he doesn't really know how. The guy has a law degree from Yale Law School, but he doesn't really understand markets either. So it's kind of a disadvantage if you want to start a business. Besides, he's got a museum to be tending to in Winsted, the Great American Tort Museum.
There you go.
So, yes, celebrating lawsuits, large and small.
Terry, a couple of other things you're writing about here I know you want to touch on. Number one, population growth. This one has always bothered me, and apparently it's bothered you, too, and I think we think alike on this.
Yeah, you know, because when I was younger, I always thought, my God, we got too many people in this world. We need population control. And China came out with the one child policies, you know, which they have since rescinded. But the problem with not growing, in fact, with reverse population growth, is that and a lot of nations are experiencing this, not only us, but developing nations or developed nations in particular, industrialized modern nations, have low birth rates. The problem with that, of course, is that when you have low birth rates, you have fewer and fewer young people working to support the needs of more and more old people.
Yep.
And the whole system just becomes unsustainable. And so the only thing is that, you know, you have you're going to have younger people who are working taxed to death in order to support geezers like me. And I don't it's not really fair, obviously.
No, you're right.
But also, the results could be catastrophic and very destabilizing for society as a whole.
So the message here is make babies, is what you're saying, which is, you know, what we're supposed to do, I guess. Right?
I think so. In Korea, they're actually paying women $2,000 to have a baby.
Really?
All right. Now,
wow.
I don't know whether we want to go that route or not, but there should be some incentives to have children. Beyond just, another dependent on your tax returns.
Yeah. Finally, Terry, I enjoyed this one you sent me, or a heads up on this one. I've seen the trailer for this. I'm a big movie guy. There's a new dramedy out there. It's being termed as with Paul Giamatti, great actor, one of my favorites. But it's kind of giving you the it's kind of freaking you out a little. What's going on with that?
Well, this movie, The Holdovers, is set in a boarding school, a fictitious boarding school in eastern Massachusetts.
Okay.
And when I first heard about it, I thought, well, this is interesting. It, you know, kind of cuts close to home because I attended a boarding school in eastern Massachusetts. And then I started looking into it, and I saw some of the stills from the promotions and the trailer, and I said, oh, my God, that's my school. And I looked at all of the different rooms and the dining room, which is this dreary Gothic wooden thing, and it still has the dead moose head up above the headmaster's table. It all looks the same. It's unbelievable. So, but it's a great movie, despite the fact that I was creeped out by it. And I would expect to see lots of Oscars coming out of this. Paul Giamatti as teacher, the faculty member who takes care of these kids who are holdovers at the boarding school that can't go home for the vacation, and a kid named Dominic Sessa, who was a real prep school student from Deerfield, who they cast in this thing, and then probably even the woman who played Divine Joy Randolph, who played this food services manager whose son graduated from that school but was killed in Vietnam. It is a terrific movie. I recommend it to you, Paul.
Gee, I will definitely see it. See, that might beat my claim to fame of being visible twice in an Eric Clapton concert video, but I think yours is a little more highbrow than me. Thanks, Terry Cowgill. Good to chat with you. We'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
Okay, always a pleasure, Paul.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Terry. True story. I'm in an Eric Clapton concert video. You may he one of his shows in 1985 was filmed at the Hartford Civic Center. Well, we used to call it the Civic Center, now the XL Center. And gosh darn it, if you can't, I had very good seats for this one. I think it was 7th or 8th row center. And you can see me in there. Not that that's an impetus to buy the video, but the performance was great.